Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Program Podcast. Today we are going to talk about a bombshell ruling from the Senate parliamentarian with the Big Beautiful Bill Act, BBB, Triple B Act. That's what they're calling it. This act would have a ton of changes across the entire economy, tons of laws, tons of tax changes, tons of spending cuts. Basically, no party usually ever has 60 votes in the Senate. So the parliamentarian has taken on a much larger role in recent years because both parties try to jam everything they want to do through in a reconciliation package, which just requires 50 votes to pass it. If you are the parliamentarian, you're trying to be fair. You're trying to do a job that kind of makes both sides a little mad at you. And the current parliamentarian has pretty well done that. Since 2012, she's been in office in her role. She has sort of gotten pushback from Republicans and Democrats on a variety of different issues. So an example would be in 2013, Democrats were getting held up a whole lot on executive and judicial appointments, and they didn't like that. And so they essentially said, well, we're going to nix the filibuster on those types of appointments. So parliamentarians said, no, you can't do that. They said, well, too bad, we're overruling you. Then in 2017, Senate Republicans did the same kind of thing, except on Supreme Court appointments, you know, instead of like the judicial appointments just below that level. So Republicans then went and overturned the Senate parliamentarian in 2017. And then more recently, Senate Republicans overturned the advice of the parliamentarian for this California rule, which would really be, you know, by far the most aggressive in the nation, that would just basically require all cars sold in California to be electric only by 2035. And so, you know, the Senate Republicans overturned her advice on that rule. So it happens when senators are like, yeah, we're not going to take the parliamentarian's advice. That's sometimes called like the nuclear option, right? You're sort of saying, well, we're just not going to respect the filibuster for something that we institutionally have said requires the filibuster. And it slows things down. It causes parties to not get what they want through on things. And it really irritates both parties when they can't pass their preferred legislation. But it does moderate bills. And the Senate parliamentarian, what it seems like, if the Senate does not overrule her, it's going to have major moderating impact on this bill for student loan borrowers. And I'm going to explain what I mean by that. So the current bill would essentially kick a lot of people that need to borrow after July 2026 onto the RAP plan, even if they're like a third-year student. Well, that'd be terrible, right? Imagine being, I've called this out before in the pod, I think. Imagine being an NYU dental student. You're going into your third year this fall in 2025, and you're going to need to borrow for your fourth year. That's going to be $150,000, right? Under the Senate proposal, if you had borrowed after July 2026, you'd be subject to the RAP plan, which is 10% of your income for 30 years. And keep in mind, the Senate version requires you to file jointly for the RAP plan and does not allow filing separate. So 10% of your income for 30 years, a whole lot of people would just be barred permanently from any kind of forgiveness on that, or they would have a massive marriage penalty if they got married. I mean, imagine being a dentist with $700,000 of student loans and having to go for forgiveness no matter what, because you have to pay $7,000 a month if you don't use an IDR plan, which is not doable, right? And then imagine having to tell your prospective spouse, hey, I've got some news. If we get married, you're going to have to pay 10% of your income forever. Or not forever, but for 30 years because of my student loans. That wouldn't be necessarily a deal breaker for some people, because if you're two high earners married to each other, you pay much higher taxes in most cases than if you're single. For example, the 3.8% investment surcharge tax, that goes into effect at $250K of income if you're joint, but only $200 or, you know, if you're single. So what do these changes mean for you? What is a parliamentarian anyway? Keep in mind, the Senate is this stodgy institution that has this thing called the filibuster, right? If you've ever watched Jimmy Stewart in that movie where, what is it? I forget what it is, but he goes to Washington, right? And he does a super long filibuster. And the filibuster has been used for not so great reasons in the past, right? Like holding up civil rights legislation. But the filibuster is something that has been around for a while. And both parties have tried to go through this budget reconciliation process to bypass those rules to get as much as what they want done. And what the parliamentarian has said is certain things are not going to fly with her and need to pass with 60 votes instead of 50 votes if they pass at all. And the big thing that's getting all the attention was the, you know, that they can't do the Medicaid cuts to Medicaid, basically, that wasn't something that you could do with 50 votes. You need 60 votes for that. But the thing that's relevant for student loan borrowers is current borrowers essentially can't have their repayment plans changed like the Senate's doing. And that mostly impacts people that are in school, it probably stops the Senate from getting rid of new IBR in this legislation if they choose to not override her. Now, that's really good in a lot of ways. I'll explain more in a second. You know, the other thing that it's good for is people that are going for PSLF. Because another thing she said is the parliamentarian, she said that this thing that would bar medical residency or fellowship from counting for PSLF, you know, you can't apply that to current borrowers. Now, note what that says. You could apply it to new borrowers. So I fully expect that both of those provisions, the bill's going to get rewritten so that everything applies to new borrowers as of July 2026. That would be what I would expect to happen. And that would be fair, you know, because you might not like the changes that the Senate's making. But if the changes are made now and the changes apply to only people who start a program after July 2026, everybody would know what the program rules are. Everybody at least would have rules that they're written out in their promissory notes that they wanted to read it that would specify what the rules of the road are before somebody makes the decision to obligate themselves to a program financially. That's a lot more fair than what the Senate's proposing. The Senate's proposing essentially to change the rules midstream and, you know, take that NYU dental student, that way they would screw them over, right, with these rule changes they're proposing. So the parliamentarian is moderating this significantly. Now, I will say this, okay, to the Senate's credit, I have to correct myself. In prior pods have said the Senate version is even worse than the House. There's a big thing that I missed in the Senate version after I read it a lot more carefully, you know, bounced things off lawyers. So actually, the Senate version of the bill initially did preserve the new IBR plan. It said, one of the provisions said, essentially add to a subsection and before July 2026, whereas the House version just said eliminating that whole section. So effectively, the Senate version was already trying to keep the new IBR plan for folks that it applied to, which is somebody who took out their first loan after July 2014. And the House version wanted to end it completely. Now, with this parliamentarian ruling, what I think it's saying is what's in the law has to be respected for current borrowers. What's in the law is old IBR and new IBR. Old IBR would be available to anybody who borrowed before July 2014 for their first loan, and then new IBR would be applicable to anybody who borrowed after July 2014 for their first loan. The new IBR plan is the same thing as pay, basically. It's 10% of income for 20 years, unless you're doing PSLF, in which case it's 10. Now, this plan would also be good for some other reasons. It takes away the cap on payments, which you might say, well, that's not good. Well, actually, it kind of is, because somebody who's going for PSLF in the past, you know, if they had too high of an income, they couldn't sign up for anything. Or they'd have to sign up for like the repay plan back when that existed, and you know, you would go above the cap, but you'd have to count your spouse's income. Or you could sign up for the ICR plan, which at least would be accessible even without a partial financial hardship. So what the Senate bill does is it takes away that partial financial hardship requirement, making it a lot more easy for high-income earners to qualify for PSLF in the last few years that they need credit for. For existing borrowers, this is not the end yet. The parliamentarian's rule's not final, right? The Senate can still go around her if it wants to. It would not be shocking with this current administration, current Senate, as it currently is constituted, if they did choose to go around the parliamentarian on certain provisions. But the Senate Majority Leader has stated that he won't overrule the parliamentarian. We will see if that happens. But he has said that he won't overrule the parliamentarian. So what that would suggest would be that old IBR is safe and new IBR is safe for existing borrowers. Now, quick note about Parent Plus borrowers. Nothing in there that I've seen says anything about Parent Plus borrowers. I think the Parent Plus borrowers, anybody who's ever had a Parent Plus loan still needs to go to studentaid.gov/IDR and apply for the Income Contingent Repayment Plan, ICR. The reason for that is because the bill, as it's currently stated, says that the bill passes. Anybody who's on the ICR plan who's ever had a Parent Plus loan gets moved to IBR. Anybody who is not on the ICR plan is out of luck or could be out of luck. Ultimately, a lot of people have asked, well, should I just do nothing and ignore this, hoping it won't pass? Well, I can't tell you do something that could destroy your retirement prospects. I'm just not going to do that, right? Like, a lot of people kind of want permission to not do something that makes them nervous. They want somebody who's an expert to say, oh yeah, just keep doing what you're doing, because they're terrified to make a change. But if I did that, then the worst case scenario is that they do pass the bill, and I could have told somebody more forcefully switch to the ICR plan. Then they could have gotten access to IBR and paid 10 to 15% of their income in retirement with the ability to file separately, not have their retirement wrecked, still be able to have a comfortable retirement. And I didn't tell them forcefully enough that they needed to take that risk, even though it is a risk and I can't guarantee anything. So that's why we're there's a little bit of a nuance of why we're telling everybody that has ever had a Parent Plus loan to switch to the ICR plan at studentaid.gov/IDR now. Again, the reason is just because there's risks either way. I am much more concerned about the risk that someone's retirement is ruined versus the risk that somebody pays more on their loans than they would have otherwise, but still overall get forgiveness. You know, there's risks no matter what. But I think for Parent Plus borrowers, that's a clear thing to do. For people who are not Parent Plus borrowers listening to this, so most people, you know, in their 20s, 30s, 40s, borrowed for their own education, if they do end up grandfathering in current borrowers, the only people that will really effectively be really hurt by the Senate plan are people on the pay-as-you-earn plan. Because the pay-as-you-earn plan would go away, and if, you know, probably from a lawsuit, right, against the SAVE plan, more than anything, or just from regulatory action the Trump administration takes, they are doing a negotiated rulemaking session specifically targeting pay and ICR. That's what they announced it for. And PSLF, you know, to try to identify organizations that don't get it because they disagree with the administration politically. I don't think that that would probably survive legal challenges if they did that, but, you know, that's what they're saying they're doing it for. But for the pay plan, I do think that people in the pay plan need to be prepared to be switched to the old IBR plan. Maybe the RAP plan will be an option too. Maybe it will be 10% of income and filing separately. And if you're going for PSLF, that might be perfectly reasonable to switch from the pay plan to the RAP plan if you're going for PSLF and you just need a few more years of credit. But if you're going for forgiveness in the private sector, folks in the pay plan are going to have some tougher decisions to make long term if courts end up making rulings that, or, you know, Trump administration makes a regulation that ends up trying to strike down the pay plan. Why? Because the pay plan is not guaranteed in the law. The pay plan was an executive action issued by President Obama, and it was designed in the 2012 election season to try to get borrowers early access to the new IBR plan that they passed. They passed it that way because they didn't want the bill to score higher on costs, because they wanted to be able to pass it. And so they did not allow people to access new IBR unless they were a new borrower as of 2014. Because of the budgetary impact and the 10-year window that, like, budgetary impacts are looked at. But, you know, they wanted to get something to talk about what they did for borrowers on the campaign trail. And so they talked about, we're rolling out the pay plan so that you can access these new IBR terms much earlier. And that was relatively uncontroversial for quite a long time until this whole mess with the SAVE plan lawsuits happened and courts started raising the question, is the ICR statute legal at all? Now, the parliamentarian is actually not done on student loans. There are more rulings that she's planning to make on things like closed school discharge, borrower defense to repayment. And there's some other things too that I would look out for with her rulings. And then we have to see what happens with the Senate. What does the Senate say? Do they want to accept her rulings? Are they palatable to the Senate? I will say this, appointing a ton of judges is very important to both political parties, right? Appointing Supreme Court judges, super important. Something that unites 110% of the Republican faction against something that is fairly, I don't want to say low stakes, but like something that's just very obvious where everybody in the Republican faction is like rah-rah, and something that won't be viewed as major in the public sort of media, you know, that's a one-off, might get shut down by the parliamentarian. That's what I'm saying. This is in context of that California emission waiver thing that they did. And, you know, they did something different from the APA standards, right? Where they're saying, you know, everybody's got to buy electric vehicles by 2035. Well, that makes sense. That would unify every Republican senator to vote against that. So they all hated that rule. And then the other thing is, you know, I think the Republican senators are sort of saying, well, this is like fairly minor compared to something that's like going to draw a ton of media attention. So for example, when they overrode the parliamentarian on that one provision, there wasn't a ton of media coverage about it. There was some, but not a ton, because it's sort of like, it doesn't seem like a huge deal. Whereas I will say this, when they changed the rules for Supreme Court nominations, that was a massive deal, right? When Democrats changed the nomination rules for, you know, executive appointments and judicial appointments, so you could appoint a bunch of circuit court judges without having to do filibusters. That was also drew a lot of media attention, not as much as the Supreme Court change that they made. But you know, in other words, it seems like that if they do override the parliamentarian, they're doing it on a specific thing versus like an entire bill. So that's why I think it's probably more likely than not that they'll respect a lot of her rulings on this, in addition to what the majority leader, Thune, Senator Thune, has said. And, you know, borrowers, keep the messages to your senators and House representatives coming. I mean, there's no harm in sending messages saying, hey, I want to be grandfathered in under the rules I borrowed under. That's all I'm asking for. That the rules Congress promised to me that led me to decide to get this education are honored. That's a reasonable expectation. You could also argue this if you're a pay borrower, that, you know, it's in your promissory note. Does Congress really want to get in the business of changing promissory notes that people borrowed under? And the answer might be that, well, maybe Congress can avoid having to make that decision by having the courts do the dirty work and rule against the ICR statute. So we're going to be following this laser close. I will say a couple points on these things. So for wealth clients, you know, reach out to your planner if needed, probably after the bill has passed, if you're not a Parent Plus borrower. If you're a Parent Plus borrower and you're a wealth client, you know, maybe feel free to reach out to your planner. They might be able to answer your question really quickly with just a quick email. That's probably better than having a big meeting about it. If you are a wealth client that's not a Parent Plus borrower, then probably just hold off booking anything about this with your financial planner until the actual bill has been hashed out between the House and the Senate and an actual bill has passed and it's signed into law. And I would even give us a couple of weeks to read through it and think through all the nuances of everything that's in it, because it's going to take us a while to get through all the implications of this big of a bill when it does pass. Now, if you're not a wealth client and you're just looking to do a student loan consult or a follow-up student loan consult, just a little bit of a honest confessional here. We staff this business based on expected demand. And when the Parent Plus kind of controversy of this, controversy is not the right word, but when the Parent Plus sort of like tidal wave happened a couple weeks ago where we realized, oh my gosh, we have to tell Parent Plus borrowers and anybody who's ever had one, get into ICR as fast as possible because of how scary this bill is, that led to a run on our calendars for our consult service. And so we got booked out several weeks. I think we're booking a few weeks out right now. If you're a Parent Plus borrower or you're not a Parent Plus borrower and you know you're going to want our expert advice on what this bill, when it passes, means for your student loans and for your finances, and you just want to do a one-off consultation to understand the details of it, I would probably schedule something for like late July or early August, and I'd probably try to get it on the calendar now just because, again, it takes me a while to get someone up to speed to be a new consultant, and I really have learned from past experiences to just not overhire when you have like these booms of demand that are sort of temporal in nature, like something big happens, like a bill passes, right? You know, you think about going to the dentist, you have to wait 3 months to get an appointment with the dentist. You know, worst case, it's probably a month to get in with us, you know, so that's hopefully tolerable to people. The only thing, you know, that's sort of semi-urgent right now I mentioned was the Parent Plus borrowers getting into ICR, but hopefully that's, you know, hopefully at least even if you can't get a hold of us to talk to us, you understand what you need to do if you've ever had Parent Plus borrow loans. So if you want to do a consult, studentloanplanner.com/book, get in the calendar probably for a few weeks from now, just to lock something in to be ready to talk about the implications of this bill with one of our experts, if you want that. We also have a situation with wealth where we have a demand that's much exceeding our supply of advisors that can provide the spots. And that's just because we are, I don't know, hopefully providing a great service for a great value. So we're thinking through different things that we can do to handle the demand in that business without kind of cutting off a ton of people from access to planners, basically. So we're just trying to do our best. That's what I'm kind of trying to share, because like I feel like the podcast folks that listen to us are almost kind of like, I don't know, like SLP family, for lack of a better word, like people that really are super fans that are just the most fun to help and talk to. And, you know, a lot of you have said that you've listened to this podcast for years. I'm flattered. I hope one day you won't have to. I hope you'll start listening to true crime instead, because it's a lot more fun. But thank you for listening. It is fun to know that somebody listens and to hear that people care that we do this show. So thank you for that. So yeah, just trying to be honest, though, about just some of the struggles we are having providing excellent service during this time of just extreme volatility. We're doing our best. I'm doing my best, trying to also stay healthy, happy, good dad, good husband, etc., going through this like kind of tough, very stress-inducing, anxiety-inducing time for a lot of people with this legislation, right? But this too will pass. It will be okay. We will be here to help. And know that people that pay attention to this stuff always end up way better off than the people that don't pay attention to this stuff. And, you know, the financial goals and dreams you have are going to be a lot more quickly achieved by paying attention to this stuff than by ignoring it. So, yeah, hopefully you can not worry when the final bill comes out, and we'll explain why you don't have to worry. But we're going to keep you updated, and we're going to keep letting you know in case something becomes urgent, you need to take action on something, because sometimes that stuff does happen, and we always want to let you know as soon as we know it. Thank you for listening to the Student Loan Planner podcast. I'm Travis. Have a great rest of your week. Are you on the free Student Loan Planner email list? If yes, you can upgrade your experience and discover student loan loopholes so good they might get repealed if I talk about them publicly. Find out my very best thought leadership that I really just can't be super open about anymore, unfortunately. If you want to get our very best tips, not just the ones that I can share for free, go to studentloanplanner.com/insider to get a special discount for your year membership. That's studentloanplanner.com/insider and get our very best dozens of bonus content and tips that's going to save you money and get you out of student debt faster. And if you're already an SLP insider, please reply back to those emails and let me know how I can make it even more valuable.